Blog Talk Radio. Today is Saturday, December 2nd, 2017, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Saturday, and thanks for listening wherever you are. I appreciate you taking the time to be here with me, and I also appreciate those of you who listen to the podcast later as well. And I always hope and pray that the shows that I'm doing are helping someone in some way to be motivated or inspired or enlightened or informed or encouraged or entertained, and sometimes even all of the above. I sincerely want you to get something to take away that blesses your heart and life, something that lands on your ears at the right time, a word that shows up and shows you something that makes perhaps a pivotal impact or change in your life for you. Yep, that's the power of platforms like this one. That's why I do what I do. We can and we do bring value and valuable information right to your phone or computer or however you channel into technology. And how cool is that? Very, very cool. Well, today I am delighted to be talking with a powerful force for change. She's Deborah King. And she is helping individuals win one of the biggest fights of their lives through her organization, Limitless Lives Recovery. And today she will tell us why she stepped into the ring and how she fought that fight and won the championship title as the Queen of Recovery. Yeah, that's right. And she's talking to me today. Welcome to Foxology, Deborah.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you have me today.
Yes, I'm glad that you could be here. Are you getting bogged down with the all the Christmas madness already, or don't you get started this early?
Well, I'm getting started because Christmas is my favorite time of year. I love Christmas.
Yes, so many.
So I enjoy the lights. I enjoy the movies. I just enjoy the spirit of giving. You know, and Christmas reminds us of what true giving is all about. If you can remove the monetary gift giving and go back to the basics of what Christmas really is, that's a season that should be carried on throughout the year.
Oh, you are so right, and how beautifully said. I look forward to it, too, and I've got some real mainstays in my life. I can hardly ever wait to see It's a Wonderful Life every year for so many years. I still just enjoy it and sit there with eyes wide open like it's the very first time I've ever watched it. I just love that movie. And like you, I love all the lights and all of that stuff. My Christmas wreath is already on my door, so I'm getting there slowly but surely, too.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's get started with our conversation today. You're doing awesome things, and you're helping a lot of people in a real important fight of their life. And you also know that fight, Deborah. And so what we will do, we'll go ahead and let you tell your story. I didn't mention in the intro your famous dad. I'm going to let you go ahead and mention all of that. But give us the backdrop of your life and story, and that'll lead us into some of the other questions and important parts of this topic we want to discuss.
Okay, well, for me, you know, I had a storybook life, so to speak. I mean, I grew up out in the country. I had my animals. I love riding horses every day. I was a member of the band and in 4-H and the Girl Scout and the cheerleader and all the normal things that young girls do. And I went away to boarding school, in which I met some of the closest friends that I have to this day. So I went through school. I went through college. I graduated on the dean's list. I did everything that a child could be expected to do by a parent. And then I went astray. So for me, drug addiction started after 40, which, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I never dibbled and dabbled in all kinds of drugs as a college student and a teenager, because I did, but it didn't have the same effect on me. So as I got older, it was relationship based. And for me, it was finding out what was more important to this guy than me. So I began to partake with him. And in doing so, you know, I walk into the store one day, and I see the headlines of the National Enquirer, and it says, Don King's heartbreak, daughter smokes crack. And I was like, wow, they're talking about me. And I start to laugh, and the man behind the counter says, well, you're a celebrity. Could you step behind the counter and sign my wall? And I did. And I'm like, you know, they want to make me embarrassed out loud. I got to learn how to recover out loud. So from that moment on, I went through every possible means of education for myself. I put myself through rehab. I left rehab, went to another rehab just to make sure I hadn't missed anything from the first one. And I stayed so long to the point where they thought I worked there. And they began to ask me, would I, I tell you the truth, I was there so long. And they started asking me to welcome in the new patients. And I was like, you know, maybe it's time to go home. Mind you, I only lived 15 minutes from the rehab. I could have went home. But I stayed there with them. And it was a true learning experience. So from there, I said, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones. And I have to be able to give back. So I went back to school at 50 years old and got a master's degree in mental health counseling because I wanted to understand every facet of the disease of addiction. Because we don't wake up and say, well, we want to be a drug addict today. There's always an underlying issue. Bipolar, schizophrenia, anxiety, depression, trauma, abuse, domestic violence, something that you're trying to cover up, numb, erase, or eliminate out of your mind. And the brain is such a powerful tool. You can run, but you can never get away from it. Your thoughts go with you everywhere you go. So you continue to stuff until it overwhelms you and, you know, your body has to shut down. So you have to make that choice, and I needed to know everything I could in order to help people. As an African-American female, I understood immediately that one of the biggest disadvantages that African-American or minority families face is they don't want to deal with the concept of a mental illness. You say that word and that label, and it spooks them, and that's not talked about, pushed under the rug. They don't have a problem, they're just bad, or this, that, and the third, instead of examining the problem. And by not doing that, and then by teaching us that we're not supposed to talk about that and we don't have those kind of issues, it escalates the abuse of any mood-altering narcotic to use to numb the pain. And if we would just learn to face things head on, we could eliminate half of the problems that we go through.
I agree with you totally. I want to get back to that, but I want to reflect on a couple of things that you said, because you explained you didn't really recognize the help that you needed until you were about 40. Now, there were a lot of years before that. You were growing up in a limelight situation with your celebrity dad. I imagine that there was some culture of drug use or influence that you were exposed to. Is that part of how you began a heavier use of drugs? Did your family members notice, or was it like you just explained, it's something people kind of look over? What was going on in those years?
Well, see, you know, back when I was more active in the sports world and things like that, in the culture of the 80s, cocaine, which happens to be my drug of choice, was a social drug. In the elements that I could go and partake in, it was there. Alcohol was there. But what people don't tend to emphasize enough, alcohol is the most dangerous drug out of all of them, because you can go find it in any grocery store on every corner, and it's legal. So alcohol tends to lead you to do other things that you might not normally try, because that dulls your system, your senses. So you're like, well, let's try this. Cocaine will pick you back up or sober you up, so to speak, if you've had too much alcohol. Marijuana will mellow the mood and just make you feel like, you know, you're coasting along. So one thing leads into the other. Any other kid, marijuana is the gateway drug. I personally enjoyed marijuana, you know what I'm saying? But for me, once I determined that I have a problem with this, I did away with everything. For a lot of people, they switch addictions. Well, you know, my problem was with cocaine. That doesn't mean I shouldn't drink. Or my problem was with pills. I just smoke a joint every now and again. To me, that's not being sober. That's being dry. And what I mean by that is you're dry to your drug of choice. But substituting one evil for another does not make the evil go away. So for me, I have to live it like I believe it. And that means I need to be free of everything. Yeah, I could make that same excuse, but I choose to do nothing. So I have no vices. I have no substitutions or temptations. I even quit smoking cigarettes. It was hard. That was harder than quitting the drug. But it was something that could lead me back into a drug. Because if you would take a survey, most drug addicts smoke cigarettes, smoke Black & Milds. I smoke both Black & Milds and cigarettes. They all go hand in hand because it's part of that oral fixation. You're doing something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So for me,
Deborah, let me ask this. Yeah, go ahead and finish first.
I was going to say, just for me, you know, I saw that one thing led to another. So knowing that there's always a possibility of a relapse, if I eliminated all the temptations, I didn't have that chance to fall back on bad choices.
Well, you sure had an incredible strength. I want to go back now, shift back to the mental illness component, the soul searching slash discovery for yourself or awakening. Tell us how the soul searching. I think that you described your condition as a depression. I imagine that most people wouldn't recognize depression as a mental illness. However, of course, we know it certainly is and can be. Talk to us about signs to look for, things that people need to do in their own soul searching that can help them. Your story is pretty incredible, how you made that determination and, you know, you said you decided to live at the rehab for a while, probably understanding that it was meant for you to do your work there. But talk about that soul search. I to hear where they need to go or how they can help someone else do the searching within themselves that needs to happen to help them have that eye-opening moment or that soul-opening moment to realize that there's help that's needed in this situation.
Well, for me, you know, the biggest problem I see and I face was the denial of being in denial. And what I mean by that there are stages and indicators of being in denial about a problem. You might get angry. You do blaming. You rationalize. You minimize. Well, I did this, but it's not as bad as that. Just things that you do to justify in your own head that this behavior is normal and acceptable. But when you're depressed, depression carries many masks. You know, when you feel like you can't be enough for you and you can't motivate your own self to just get up in the morning, when you look in your mirror at the person looking back at them and you can't find joy in just being alive, you need to step back and look at that, because no one should feel sad all the time. You know, the life goes on all around you, and if you tend to see yourself withdrawing from life, that's an indication that there's a problem. You begin to isolate. You begin to lose contacts with your friends and family. You begin to just withdraw. And you can be there in the room but not be present. You stare off. You're like in your own little world because you're keeping people out. And by doing so, that eliminates you from having to answer that question, what's wrong? Is something bothering you? You don't want to hear that. So if you bite back at people, be angry or just ill-mannered, they tend to leave you alone. All a defense mechanism that we create for ourselves to avoid facing that there's a problem.
I'm glad you clarified that, because that really gives light to behaviors that we may notice in people, and certainly people could easily recognize on their own. Well, I know that you came through this courageously, as I said, and it's been a great victory for you. You stepped into the ring, and now you're knocking out addiction by helping others in their lives. Tell us about the launch of Limitless Recovery, Limitless Life Recovery.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, for me, you know, once I decided that I wanted to go back to school and learn all I can, and understood that there are core issues that build up one's tendency to become addicted, then I had to study all the addictions. You know, drugs and alcohol is not the only addiction. So when people say you have a problem, be able to explore those problems. You know, you could have a gambling addiction, a sex addiction, a shopping addiction, an addiction to the lifestyle. There's so many. You could be addicted to caffeine. You could be addicted to nicotine. Anything that takes you outside of yourself and controls you is an addiction. So with that being said, I wanted to do something special. Everybody doesn't fit into the neat little box of going to rehab. It's not one size fits all. So when I came up with the concept of Limitless Life, I said I want to be a concierge therapist. I will bring the therapy to you. But one of the main prerequisites to work with me is total honesty and commitment. I don't play recovery. This is what I do. This is who I am, and this is how I live. So if you haven't made that choice that you really want to go through this, then don't call me, because it's not easy. And I will never say that it is, but it is possible, because I'm a living example of that. So what I do in concierge therapy, I come to you, I assess you, I create a program built around whatever your needs and issues are, and then we do it day by day together. I may move in your house. We may go rent a house somewhere, but I'm the first thing you see when you wake up and the last thing you see when you go to bed. I am your new best friend, because I will never ask more of my client than I was willing to do for myself. And together, we will come out of this victoriously, because you must always understand you are never alone.
That's really awesome. That's really awesome. Now let me ask, how long have you been offering your services?
I've been doing this probably about 4 years, and I help select a few, and the greatest reward in the world is when you see the light bulb come on in the client's eyes and they get it. And they begin to learn to love life. I tell them, I said, life is the greatest gift God can give us. How we live that life is our greatest gift back to God. So I tell them to work on your dash. You were given your day of birth. We don't yet know our end, so we need to work on that dash. How do we want to be remembered? And with saying that, the ability to help someone find their self again is rewarding. We lose some, and it's very heartbreaking. And with this opioid epidemic crisis that's going on in America and around the world right now, I feel I have to raise my voice and be the voice for those who can't fight for themselves. We have to advocate for this to end. Last year alone, 64,000 people died of a drug overdose. And my great state of Ohio, where I was born, was 11,000. That's too many people. That's too many people. It's estimated that about 650,000 people will die of an overdose within the next 10 years. That's a country. That's the size of the population of a country.
Potential for incidences increase around this time of year. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Holidays are always tough. I wrote an article that's on Huffington Post, and I'm going to probably put it back out on strategies to deal with the holidays. And I give tips in there on what you need to do. You don't have to remove yourself from the functions, but you have to be vocal enough to let everybody know you're in recovery, because people will applaud you for being in recovery and they'll be in support of you. They might not want to drink any either, or they might not want to partake in what's going on in the next room either. But so they'll sit right out there with you. You don't have to remove yourself unless you feel that that situation you're in is toxic for you. But you're to enjoy the holidays anyway. If you go back to my earlier statement when I say the true meaning of Christmas, everybody can enjoy from 0 to 80. Because it's not about getting high or getting drunk or losing control. It's about the birth of Jesus. So use the holiday to be what it is for what it is. Quit making a holiday or a birthday an excuse to exhibit poor behavior.
I would think too, Deborah, that this would be a time where there would be increased anxiety, even if it wasn't I shouldn't go to that family party, or I shouldn't go to the office celebration or whatever. We tend to get overwhelmed with what we feel we would like to do for people as far as buying things and, all caught up in the whole idea of so many people go through spending hundreds and thousands of dollars to try to feel like you're a part of it, when in actuality it's something totally different that should be recognized. Just say something brief and we're going to wrap. To those people who may be faced with the whole burden of just feeling the anxiety and that making them feel some kind of way in regard to responding in a negative way.
Okay, well, for people that struggle with anxiety, first thing I tell you to do is just stop. Be still, sit down, and breathe. Let your breath coordinate with your heartbeat and you become balanced. Then you can make yourself, if you need to, lists of why you should go versus why you shouldn't go. Talk it out with yourself, because normally in an anxious situation, you become impulsive. So always pause, pray, proceed, because first thought wrong. So step back and just get in tune with yourself. Sometimes it's better just to be still and you'll get the message. You are responsible for overwhelming yourself because you don't step back out of the situation to allow yourself to be calm. So make that choice that you come first and just be okay with you and the answers will come.
Yes, yes. Yes, that's great, great, great advice, making the right choice during those situations. Well, it has been real special talking to you, Deborah. I want to, again, thank you. Your information is very, very insightful, and I know it's going to be inspirational and very insightful for a lot of people who may need to have a little encouragement during this time and knowing that there is some place that they can turn to get the help they need. Would you go ahead and give out your information about your website, and if there is any other information you'd like to share for whoever may be able to reach out to you? I know you mentioned that there is a selective few that you typically deal with, but maybe you are also able to get out some more mainstream information for people who are not in your area and cannot work with you, but give out your website and any other information you would like. I do have your speaker information on my page as well, so whatever you'd like to share in that way, you could go ahead and do that right now.
For my website, it's www.limitlesslife.com. You can reach me through email at limitlesslife@gmail.com. I'm on social medias as I am Deborah King, Instagram and Twitter, and I am always an ear to listen. And my parting message was, please believe in yourself like I believe in you, and live happily in God's hands. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
And thank you for taking the time. I'm going to reach out to you. There's something else I'd like to talk to you about, so I'm going to give you a call again shortly to discuss that. But thanks for taking time to do the show. You're truly a blessing.
Oh,
keep up the amazing work.
You are so welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I want to thank all of you, as I usually do, for taking the time again to tune in. And as I have always promised you, I'm going to bring you something that's going to be educational, enlightening, some way helpful to your life or how you can be a help to someone else's life. It's how I do what I do, and I absolutely enjoy the opportunity and the privilege to be able to do so. This is a wonderful platform, and I do expect to continue to offer as much information as I can that can impact the lives of many, many people in many, many ways. So I want to thank you again, and I'm going to look forward to talking with you next week. It's Master Your Mindset. You know how I love that show. My special guest is always TV host Cassandra McShepherd, and we'll be sharing some information probably surrounding the upcoming holidays. So I hope you'll tune in for that. Keep your eyes open for that information on social media. I want you to have the most amazing day, the most amazing weekend. And in the meantime, until the next time, I look forward to you talking to you again. Be good. Be blessed. Be awesome.